Good morning. Welcome to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Today's Tuesday, the 12th day of April, 2005. It's now 10 minutes to the hour of 9 a.m. Senator French, Senator Guest, Senator Terrio, Senator Huggins, myself, Senator Seekins, all members are present. We're going to continue on with Senate Bill 20 this morning. Senator Dyson. Senator, welcome to the Judiciary Committee this morning. We're eager to hear your comments and continuation on this bill. I see you've brought your trusty sidekick with you.
Yes, sir. And thank you for the committee's work and consideration. We left here at our, after the last hearing to with what we understood instructions on troublesome issues to deal with. And Department of Law has been particularly helpful in working with us. We have for your consideration a committee substitute that includes the modifications that we believe take care of the issues that were raised here in committee.
That draft / C for Charlie?
Yes, sir. So
you have a quizzical look on your face.
I didn't know we had a committee substitute. My apologies.
So the changes are page 2, line 2021. What we have done here is trying to deal with the issue of when can a person, and particularly the mother, be charged. And what we have done is gone through the bill and raised the standard to recklessly. And the word recklessly has a significantly tighter meaning in law than it does in the dictionary. And as I understand it, under criminal law, a person acts recklessly when they are aware of and consciously disregard a risk. It's unjustifiable substantial risk where of a bad result is easily possible, and disregards the risk, where disregarding the risk would be a gross deviation from a reasonable person's actions. So recklessly here doesn't have the connotation the dictionary gives of perhaps being adventurous. It is to consciously disregard and a substantial risk, and doing so would be a gross deviation from what a reasonable person or reasonable expectations.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Senator Guest.
Senator Dyson, I'm having a hard time following you and seeing where the changes are.
All right, this is
I'm on / C, page 2, line 20.
Yeah. The recklessly is.
We had recklessly in / X. I'm looking at it intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly. So that I'm sorry, I'm just having a hard time figuring out what the
Senator Guest, through the chair, Wes Keller for record, staff for Senator Dyson. And what's been added is recklessly by means of a dangerous instrument. So it raised the standard. It's still recklessly, but it has really narrowed it considerably because it is not only recklessly, it's also by means of a dangerous instrument.
Thank you. Yeah. That's what I was.
And that was my oversight. And the adding of the dangerous instrument really does narrow quite significantly the crimes, the situations under which a person might be charged.
Senator, do you have a definition of dangerous instrument?
through the chair, Senator Seekins, that's a criminal law definition. I believe it's 1181-914, and I have it here. I could read it to you if you want. But
I assumed you'd have it.
A dangerous instrument means any deadly weapon or anything that, under the circumstances in which it is used, attempted to be used, or threatened to be used, is capable of causing death or serious physical injury.
So is someone's fists or feet a deadly or a dangerous instrument?
Senator Seekins, I asked that question to the Department of Law, and they said, yes, there are cases in that that is exactly the case, that fists and feet can be dangerous.
So if someone pounded some woman with their feet or fists, they could be guilty of this section?
I understand, I guess.
Thank you.
Yep. Lines 25, 26, same page, adds the dangerous instrument. Page 4, lines 7 to 15, this is trying to narrow here the serious, what serious physical injury means, and let's see. This adds, you know, the complication on birth weight for a premature birth. That's really complicated if you have multiple births. So this straightens that out.
How many pounds is 2,500 grams?
Five, I think. Is it 5'5"?
Okay. Then let's see. Line the adds controlled substance to the definition here on lines 9 and 10, and then addicted infant, and then finally on line 14, 15 adds a clear case of fetal alcohol syndrome. And I, since we had this committee substitute prepared for you, the department has come back and said we probably need to add a definition in our state law of fetal alcohol syndrome. And we do not have that for you, and it'll be our desire that you not pass on this bill until we get that for you. And we hope to have that for you by Thursday.
Senator Terrio.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I'm just trying to figure out here on page 4 the changes, the language that you've added. Before it was serious physical injury if you, you know, pushed the pregnant woman down the stairs and she delivered, caused her to deliver early. Or, I guess I'm not sure now. The child is born and has either signs of FASE or has alcohol in their system. Who gets charged?
In just taking a look at the definitions, Senator Dyson, my primary concern lies in on page 4, lines 5 through 8, particularly 7 and 8. Where we have a big topic for discussion here, in except for a multiple birth, the birth of an unborn child before 37 weeks, if the child weighs less than 2,500 grams. I came within 1 ounce, you know, with my first, who is now 6 feet tall and 230 pounds. But rather than getting into that area, I'm very concerned from my perspective with paragraphs 2, 3, and 4, because those can cause premature births, but if those substances are present, then I have, I think that we should hold someone accountable for that, regardless of the birth weight, whether it's premature or not premature. And I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
I think that adding the multiple birth thing there protects the mother from being charged. I think that the 37 weeks and the birth weight issue needs to have a little more research and make sure that we're right there where current art medical art is, and an error on the side of not exposing somebody to being charged. The idea that someone can be charged for if indeed their child is born with alcohol in the system or a controlled substance. One of my foster kids was born with a heart rate of 230, crack cocaine, and he had a tough few weeks. So I'm comfortable with that, but those things, and fetal alcohol syndrome is quite clear in the medical stuff. Fetal alcohol effects is not. Fetal alcohol syndrome, the child has dwarf structure, small eyes, generally no cleft in the upper lip, and those things are quite easily defined. Fetal alcohol effects are not, oftentimes not even suspected till a kid is 10 years old or so. So that's it. But all of those three things that result from controlled substance, alcohol, and so on and so forth, although I agree with the chair, I feel strongly about them, I'm not willing to sacrifice this bill in order to get them included this time. If indeed the committee and the Senate agrees, fine. I think it's a great place to go to help protect unborn children. But I don't want that to get the larger thing sacrificed.
Okay. Discussion, questions for the senator. Let's get through some of the public testimonies on there, unless you have additional concern. Do you have additional, Senator Dyson, changes in this CS?
I'm sorry?
Was that the total sum of the changes in the CS?
Yes.
Chair would entertain a motion to adopt this CS as our working document.
So moved.
Senator Huggins has moved the CS as our working document. Is there objection? Hearing none, it's adopted. Senator Dyson?
Yeah, thank you. And I think it would be helpful, we can do it in between now and the next time we meet, but it would be helpful to make the conceptual amendments that were mentioned on page 4, or additionally is added at the end of line 6, or is line added at the end of line 13, and is added, on the end of line 13, and is struck, or is substituted, and at the end of line 14, or is struck, and is substituted.
Is there a...
So moved.
The move, Senator Guess has moved that on line 6 between the words and includes, the word additionally is inserted. On line 13, the word and is deleted and the word or is inserted. On line 14, the word or is deleted and the word and is inserted. Is there objection? Seeing none, amendment number 1 is adopted.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Guess.
Mr. Chair, may I just, for the committee and the sponsors, I wanted to bring up another issue so we could think about it before we go to public testimony. And it's again on this section of serious physical injury, and there's two issues that hit me the other day. One is that the way I read the bill in its current form, if a woman who often these days people take fertility drugs, has multiple, takes fertility drugs or doesn't and ends up with multiple births, there's often the choice of whether or not for the health of some of the fetuses there's selection reduction. And some women choose to do that and families do that and some don't. In my current reading of this bill, I think we can penalize women who choose not to and may have choose to have, let's say, 6 children, and one of them, let's say, has cerebral palsy, which often happens. I still think because of the issue of serious physical injury, and if you read serious physical injury, it is unlawful in the situation. I want to bring that up just for people to think about. We can discuss it later. But the way I read serious physical injury and this bill, it's a conscious decision not to do selective reduction. And as a result of that, if one of those babies, you know, has impairment of health, then that's falling under the assault. I don't think that's where the sponsor wants to go. I don't think that's where this committee wants to go. But it happens more and more as technology is moving forward. So I just wanted to bring up that issue for people to start thinking about. The other, and I guess it's a question for the sponsor, I had asked Wes is, you know, does this open up civil liability? And I think because we're criminalizing acts, it does. I think we need to also start thinking about third parties and whether or not someone can sue someone else because they had a premature baby, because they weren't, you know, they were, you know, they had to go back to work or they had something else happen, and how this is going to impact the civil court along with the criminal court. And I wanted to get that out now because they're two kind of, for me, I'm still trying to get my head around them, but for people to start thinking about. Thank you.
Okay, Senator French.
Chairman, I had a question along those same lines for the Department of Law, and I wonder if we could just get that question and answer on the record before we hear from the public.
Sure. What was your question, Senator French?
Just stepped out, unfortunately. I noticed Annie isn't far away, right outside the door.
We will see if we can retrieve Ms. Carpinetti.
There she is.
Ms. Carpinetti, could we ask you to step into the hot seat there, or sit in the hot seat?
Yes.
Senator French had a question. Senator French?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Carpinetti, last year we, with my full support, passed a law which mandated some consecutive sentencing for each crime committed against a person. Yeah, the objection was that judges frequently collapse sentences into one sentence when you get three or four victims, and it irritated me to no end to see judges doing that, because person is a person, and if you hurt three people, you should get a longer sentence, at least the way I saw it. And so the question I wanted to ask is, under Senator Dyson's bill, if a drunk driver kills a woman who is 2 weeks pregnant, and it's ruled by a jury to be, say, murder two, given the totality of the circumstances, what effect would that have on that person's sentence?
If the person was convicted of two homicides?
Right.
Under the bill?
Right.
Well, this 1255-127 requires consecutive terms, if it's murder two, for a mandatory minimum term of imprisonment. So murder two right now has a mandatory minimum, I believe, of 20 years. So it would be
10 or 20?
Well, I'll double check. Depends on who is murdered. If it's a child, it's 20. If it's an adult, it's 10. So it would be 20 years.
It would be 10 plus 20?
20, yes, it could be. And it depends on how the person is prosecuted for the homicide.
All other things being equal, though, under my scenario, a woman, 2 weeks pregnant, blindsided by a drunk driver at an intersection, he's got enough DWI convictions to support a murder two charge and conviction. And if she's 2 weeks pregnant, the mandatory minimum goes from 10 years that he'd get
for the woman
killed the adult, and plus 20 for the embryo.
I think you're correct. I would like to just look at the provision in 1255 that imposes the mandatory 20 years, but I think you're correct.
Roughly.
I stand to be corrected, but I think you're roughly correct.
And Senator Guest brought up the use of fertility drugs in multiple pregnancies. If a woman were found to have three embryos, under this bill, with each embryo being a separate charge conviction, the sentencing law that we passed last year, I take it, would mandate an additional 20 years for each embryo. Is that right?
That's technically possible. Under the circumstances, it would really depend on the facts, on where that woman was in her pregnancy, whether it was possible for anybody to know. I mean, at early stages, it's hard to know that there are multiple pregnancies. But technically,
assuming we knew, assuming she'd just come from the doctor, and the doctor said, congratulations, you have quintuplets.
Mm-hmm. That's technically possible.
Ms. Carpinetti, if the woman had three children in the back seat of her car and they were all killed, we'd have the same result, right?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, may I
Senator Guess?
Annie, am I correct that if this bill becomes law, there's also the remedy in civil court for any of the crimes that occur?
You'll have to ask a lawyer who knows about civil liability. I really would hesitate to advise you on that. Generally, you know, looking back to my law school lessons, an act that's a crime generally can be the basis for civil liability, and the fact that a crime has been proven by beyond a reasonable doubt makes a huge difference in the viability of that civil lawsuit. But I would prefer you get better advice from somebody who knows.
Maybe Senator Dyson, could you get an answer? Do you mind just asking Department of Law if?
Sure.
Okay, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Just about, my experience is that just about anybody can bring a civil action on just about anything.
Yes, Mr. Chair, but whether or not it could move forward on a preponderance of evidence, that's what I was.
I understand. It's just an open door, though. All right. Any other questions for Ms. Carpinetti at the moment? Hearing none, let's do some of the public testimony on this. And we don't have a lot of time. We're going to try to get folks to keep their comments fairly concise. And we'll start out with the Fairbanks LIO. We got Brenda Stanfill there. Brenda, are you online with us this morning?
I am online.
Brenda, welcome to Judiciary Committee. And if you'll please put your name on the record and any affiliation you have, we would be more than happy to hear your testimony this morning.
Okay, my name is Brenda Stanville. I'm the executive director of the Tier Alaska Center for Nonviolent Living. And I had the opportunity to speak with you, Senator Seekins, and also Senator Terrio when I was down in Juneau. So some of this may be a little redundant to you, but to get it out there to your full committee. Since I've been home from Juneau late Thursday night, I've shared this bill with 28 women. And I got all 28 women expressed concerns, including my mother, who's a minister's wife, that there's a lot of unintended consequences of this bill. Well, it's the thought process and the concept of protecting an unborn child is not one that I protest. There is a lot of areas here that there's questions. Speaking as the voice of domestic violence victims, I am very concerned with the language that charges a person with first-degree assault for knowingly engaging in conduct that results in serious physical injury to an unborn child. We continue to work in a society that blames victims for the abuse that they, by asking the question, why does she stay? We hear this all the time. Very seldom do we hear, why does he continue beating her? A prosecutor who does not understand the dynamics of a domestic violence relationship might well decide to charge a woman who has repeatedly gone home. They could easily argue that she knowingly made the choice to go home and should have been able to predict another beating would happen. It's quite frequent that prosecutors are frustrated with victims who will not testify, and I just don't believe we should pass a bill that relies on prosecutorial discretion to decide if they are charged with a crime. Let's fix the bill to make sure it cannot happen by adding language relating to illegal conduct. Speaking as a woman, I am concerned that we are defining an unborn child from the point of conception. Having had three children of my own, I know from experience that sometimes you're a month long before even realizing that you're pregnant. You know, should I have been guilty of a crime if something had happened and I had miscarried during that time of not knowing? And then my question is, how far do we take this? Do we now take on the responsibility of having OCS protect an unborn child? Will we lock up a pregnant woman who is drinking to assure the safe child? Does OCS investigate reports of damage to an unborn child, potentially? Question of, will doctors have to report on miscarriage and stillborn deaths when there can be an investigation? What about the women who will quit seeking medical care after a miscarriage for fear of being charged with a crime? What about women who cannot access prenatal care? If the child is not born perfect, is their knowing conduct of no prenatal care make them guilty of a crime? What about smoking during pregnancy? Where does this bill end? There are too many unanswered questions in this bill, and I urge you not to pass this bill until the language has been changed to address all of the issues. I also urge you to explore using aggravators and other options instead of this bill attached to current laws to accomplish your goal. Thank you.
Questions for Ms. Stanfield. Ms. Stanfield, have you seen the sponsor's committee substitute on this bill?
I have not seen this morning. The one they gave me this morning was still the X.
Okay. I think version Charlie will probably address some of your concerns. So you might want to take a look at that.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Let's see. Next, Megan Gogan from Bethel. Megan, are you online with us this morning? If you'll please introduce yourselves, yourself and any affiliation you have, we're eager to hear your testimony. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Megan Gahan, and I'm living here in Bethel. And in regards to Senate Bill 20, I appreciate the idea behind this bill, wanting to protect victims. But when I read the text of the bill, I think it completely bypasses the primary victims in these crimes, the pregnant women. And I think if we focus on keeping her safe, we'll keep the fetus safe as well. And this bill doesn't completely address the crime of violence against women. And with that in mind, I think that there are many unintended consequences. First, if a woman doesn't seek immediate medical attention, she could end up dying. And second, unfortunately, in abusive situations, many women are less likely to seek medical attention if they fear that their abusers could be charged with homicide. I think it's difficult enough for victims of domestic violence to seek help alone, let alone seeking this medical attention if they fear that an abuser can be charged with homicide. Also, I fear that if perpetrators of violence find out about this bill and know the consequences, they may do anything that they can to prevent women from going to the hospital, which again puts women and fetuses at greater risk. Alaska's rates of domestic violence and sexual assault, including those assaults on pregnant women, are way too high in my mind, and I think that it's very important to use this bill to strengthen Alaska's laws relating to violence against pregnant women. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Any questions for Megan? Seeing none, we have Michelle DeWitt, also in Bethel. Michelle, welcome to the Judiciary Committee this morning. If you'll introduce yourself to us, we're eager to hear your testimony this morning.
Thank you. I'm Michelle DeWitt, and I'm the director of Tender Women's Coalition here in Bethel. And I echo a lot of the comments put forth by Brenda and also by Megan here in Bethel. I'm concerned about this bill. I've listened to the debate this morning and some talk about the substitutes, and I haven't seen the latest version, but I'm still concerned about the bill, particularly when you all were talking about by means of a dangerous instrument and the discussion of what situations may or may not be prosecuted. And I know from living in Bethel for, you know, a number of years, almost 8 years, that there's a lot of prosecutorial discretion that happens, a lot of law enforcement discretion in terms of what is charged, what's submitted to the DA's office. And I think it's impossible to know what will or won't be prosecuted as this bill is currently written. I think once this is on the books, the local prosecutors, local law enforcement officers are going to be making a lot of these decisions, and I'm concerned about it. I think there are a lot of unintended consequences that could occur. Some of those you've heard Brenda and Megan already address. I'm concerned that this bill does not address the crime of violence against women. And I'm concerned, like Megan said, that women will fear seeking medical attention if they know the consequences. They'll be afraid that their partner is going to be charged with murder. And I think at that point, you have women's lives that are then put in jeopardy because they aren't seeking medical attention. So I have a number of concerns. I've talked about this bill with a lot of folks in Bethel, ranging from women in the shelter to the staff of PWC to my own roommates. and across the board, I'm hearing a lot of concern about this bill that currently stands, and I suggest that you all explore other alternatives, including looking at sentencing aggravators. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony this morning. Here in Juneau, we have Janelle Hafner. Janelle? Good morning, Janelle. Welcome to Judiciary Committee. If you'll introduce yourself for the record and your affiliation, we're eager to hear your testimony this morning.
Good morning. I'm Janelle Hafner. I'm a private citizen and a lawyer here in Juneau. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for hearing us all today. A lot of what I had intended to say has been far more eloquently spoken by previous individuals, so I won't reiterate, but I will say that I'm impressed with the fact that we all agree that domestic violence is a serious problem and addressing crimes against pregnant women is important. That being said, I think that the creation of a separate criminal offense is redundant. I believe it will ultimately dilute Alaska's efforts to combat domestic violence at a very critical time. Most problematically for me, SB 20 introduces legally unsound principles. It rests on legislative adoption of medically inaccurate and misleading terminology, and it ultimately places us on a collision course with very basic tenets of Alaska constitutional law. Moreover, nowhere has the creation of this separate offense actually been shown to decrease the number of pregnant women that are being assaulted. Salient alternative approaches do exist, however, which are in fact effective at deterring violence and furthering these state policy goals. Statutory aggravators serve as a far more appropriate remedy in punishing violent acts. They serve as a better utilization of the scarce state resources. They, in my opinion, alleviate the problems with prosecutorial discretion that currently exist behind SB 20. They alleviate the proof problems that exist throughout this bill as written, and they also address the concern with the lack of legal causation requirements that are also currently problematic in SB 20. Most importantly, if you're committed to protecting women, pregnant women in particular, I ask that you increase domestic violence spending across the board, offer greater access to prenatal care, and improve and expand women's access to educational, social, and health programs that are in fact shown to equip women and their families to live strong and safe lives. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Appreciate your test. Oh, Senator Huggins? Yeah.
Question. Could you elaborate on, you said the constitutional collision?
Actually, that's a good point. Anyone that raises a level of constitutionality, since you're a lawyer, I require a brief.
What's my deadline on that, Senator?
Take all the time you want. Have it here by 5 o'clock.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that.
Because I have heard this question of constitutionality, and it's referred to, but never briefed. And so you can understand my reluctance to accept it on someone's allegation rather than on some kind of brief.
I understand your reluctance. I think, unfortunately, the way our system works is that many of the constitutional and legal problems that are addressed immediately in the bill aren't really raised and fully briefed until a legal challenge. I think that SB 20 is subject to a legal challenge, and again, I'm speaking as a private citizen, so I don't want, you know, my legal, I'm by far an employee of the Department of Law, but I'm sorry, go ahead. It creates legal personhood from the moment of conception, and the U.S. Supreme Court, while we don't need to get into a discussion of, you know, the implications of reproductive rights or one's individual feelings on that, when the Supreme Court has spoken that a woman's right to terminate a pregnancy is protected until a certain point, and the state cannot interfere with that. And then the state creates legal personhood while simultaneously stating it's homicide and assault for an individual to perpetrate acts that cut that short. It seems somewhat unbelievable to me that you can then exempt a woman who undergoes a legal abortion. You're essentially consenting, you're allowing a woman to consent to murder, or consent to an assault on her fetus, which conflicts with the very idea of a protected choice under the Constitution. So I think that's fairly problematic. And
I think it'd be an interesting brief, but I don't agree with that concept. I think this bill has protected a woman's so-called constitutional rights, but it doesn't allow anyone else to kill that child.
I think I respectfully disagree, but I think it does create an interesting legal conundrum, and it may very well be months or years. But I think the safest bet and the easiest and by far most effective approach is to commit resources to statutory aggravators, which don't carry any of the implications, and they don't pose the same legal threats, perceived or real. And I think they're just as effective, if not more so.
Better?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Your previous statements notwithstanding, are you concerned both as a lawyer, are you a mother?
I'm not a mother.
Are you concerned about the growing tide of newly borns that are affected either by drugs or alcohol? Are you concerned about that?
Oh, absolutely. I think that...
So my assumption then is that you are supportive of those provisions. Is that true or false?
I am not supportive of any provisions in the bill that serve as punitive measures for a pregnant woman while carrying. I believe that it's more appropriate to remedy and alleviate the underlying causes rather than to punish pregnant women for their conduct while pregnant.
You're essentially saying no accountability for mother with conduct if fetal alcohol syndrome or drug addiction is the symptom of when the baby's born?
Well, there may, in fact, be accountability, but I think from a legal, from a social standpoint, I think resources are better spent on remedying the problem than punishing behavior after it exists. I think if we're all genuinely concerned about the prevalence of fetal alcohol syndrome across the state, that we can agree on a common approach, and that's targeting it before the circumstances which give rise to a woman's drinking exist.
Senator French.
To amplify on that, because I think Ms. Hafner's made a good point. I think there may be legal accountability, because that's what I take to be Senator Huggins' concern, short of punitive measures. There may be some way to hold someone accountable, short of prison.
Well, just so that I'm clear on this issue, I have no tolerance for violence against women, men, boys, children, or unborn children. I don't particularly think that I agree with any of that. And, I look at it and say, you don't have to spend a lot of time with children with fetal alcohol syndrome until you determine that someone has abused them. A conscious act has caused that child to not be able to enjoy a normal life. And some kind of fiscal accountability just doesn't seem to be much of a deterrent, and we've never held anybody to that standard. I think we ought to hold them to all those standards when they, through a conscious act, inflict that kind of damage on a child. But that's my personal take on it. But I just would like to see someone, because I get all the emails, my constitutional rights are being challenged. I don't believe that they are, so I'd like to see. And these conundrums cause a huge amount of employment in your profession. My son is one. So if someone would just give me a constitutional analysis of how this bill threatens someone's constitutional rights, I'd greatly appreciate it.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll put in a request with the Department of Law. I'm sure that someone over there has to be happy. But thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Appreciate your testimony this morning.
Thank you.
Let's move on to Kate Burkhart. Kate? Welcome to Judiciary Committee this morning. Appreciate your being here. If you'll put your name on the record, we're eager, and any affiliation you have, we're eager to hear your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Kate Burkhart. I am a citizen of Douglas and an attorney practicing here in Juneau. And like many people that you've heard from today, I have some concerns about the way the bill is drafted. However, I do believe that the intent of the bill to protect women and their families is extremely laudable. And I think that Senator Seekins' statements just now about how socially, we are against violence against women, men, children, unborn children. I think that that is definitely a laudable intent. However, my concern has to do with an underlying sense of value behind the bill. The behavior that the bill imposes criminal liability for, if committed against a woman who is not pregnant, is not a felony. If you hit me, push me down the stairs, more likely than not, you're going to be charged with assault in the fourth degree, and that's a misdemeanor. However, if I were pregnant and the exact same conduct caused an injury to the fetus that I was carrying or caused me to lose the child, it's now a felony. And what that says is that my pregnancy is more important than me. And surely that's not really what we're saying with this bill. What we're saying is we want to protect women and children against violence. And so my concern is the idea that pregnancy is more important than the woman who is pregnant. And like many others who have testified before the committee, I do believe that the intent behind the bill to protect women and their pregnancies is better served by the use of aggravating factors in sentencing. I also believe that it would be better served to increase penalties for violence committed against people, especially violence committed by an intimate. In most cases, domestic violence assaults do end up as fourth degree assaults, which are misdemeanors. And to assault an intimate surely is more important than what a misdemeanor would provide. And I know there's been a lot of discussion about domestic violence in the testimony, and but I think my concern has to do more with the idea of valuation, and that a woman who's not pregnant is just as valuable as a woman who is, and that the issue has to do with the value we place on human life, whether it's the woman or the pregnancy. Thank you.
Questions, Senator Huggins?
Ms. Burkhart, and your concern about the mother's, I'll use my words, subordinated position versus the fetus. One can defend themselves, the other can't, number one. Number two, let me take this to a different culture, the Oriental culture. And you ride a subway in Korea, as an example. There is no space. People elbow you, they will squeeze the accordion with little regard for your body in the space that most of us as Americans normally enjoy because we don't like to touch one another. If you're pregnant, however, they will give great deference to you because they're concerned about that young person inside of you. So I think if you look around the world, the attitude is different, even in other cultures, the difference between someone that's pregnant versus.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your testimony. Let's look next with Robin Smith. Welcome, Robin. Appreciate your being here. If you'll put your name on the record. By the way, Senator Huggins, I think you hit an issue there. It's not the pregnancy that I'm concerned about. That's a medical term. It's the life of the unborn child that I'm concerned about and the welfare of the unborn child. That's a different issue. A medical term isn't what we're trying to protect. We're trying to protect an otherwise undefended person. Robin, please, if you'll put your name on the record, we're eager to hear your testimony this morning.
Thank you. I'm Robin Smith, and I'm testifying in opposition to the way this bill is being drafted, and I agree with the past two women, so I'm not going to go into the aspects that they've looked at because I actually do agree with them that we should be increasing the statutory aggravators. But I guess I'm concerned about this concept of reckless behavior. And unfortunately, since the new revisions or new draft had not been provided for us, I may not be as clear as I might be had I had that, but we weren't given that form. But I guess I look at a lot of different problems that are going here. One is that we're not acknowledging that alcoholism is a disease. People who are alcoholics do not will themselves to, okay, I'm going to stop drinking today. You know? It's a process. And I do think we have to look at it as, I mean, you know, it is a disease. It's something that the medical community looks at as a disease that takes time to treat. And it's not something that, boom, wow, I'm pregnant today, I'm no longer going to be an alcoholic. So I look at these women who may want the very best for their pregnancy, may deeply want to keep this child, may want to raise the child in the best possible condition that they have, but because of their disease, do not handle the situation in an appropriate manner. The same thing can be said about, and one of the things they even talk about, there are those people who are genetically predispositioned to alcoholism. You know, I mean, so that's a genetic part of what's going on within their system. Then we look at young women who may become pregnant, and because they know they shouldn't be pregnant, because they feel guilty, do not seek appropriate prenatal care. Is that not putting the fetus at greater risk? I mean, if you do not seek prenatal care, you are much more likely to have a premature child. And so we're not looking at that. And I guess an odd thing that comes out of this would be that if I was a woman who was talking to a pregnant woman who was an alcoholic, I might actually encourage her to go have an abortion, because I would say, you're legally allowed to have an abortion, but if you carry this baby to term and it ends up with fetal alcohol syndrome, then you could be prosecuted. So would it not in some ways have a counter response to potentially saving this life by saying, okay, you know, get an abortion now, because now you're safe under the law, but down the road you aren't. So I don't think this bill, although I really admire what people are trying to do, I don't think this bill is looking at this from the simplest manner that could address the situation, which is increasing the statutory aggravators. And I hope you seriously consider this. Oh, and one other one was, I was thinking mental retardation's another one. If somebody is mentally retarded enough to perhaps do risky behavior, but still know the difference between right and wrong, that too can impact their decisions that they make during a pregnancy. So it's really, I think we need to really look at the long-term down-the-road consequences and not just that immediate wanting to protect the unborn child. So I hope you consider my thoughts, and thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you for being here this morning. Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Smith, I don't know enough about fetal alcohol syndrome, so maybe you can, and if you do, maybe you can tell us. If you don't, then I'll wait and ask the question of another witness. But I'm curious about when in a pregnancy embryo or a fetus is most susceptible to those.
You're really going to need to talk to somebody.
I'm sorry to put you on the spot.
I do know one of the factors that does occur with, I think, it's fetal alcohol syndrome, is they have a decreased ability to assess the risk in a situation and then make a good judgment call, because they, I do know that risk assessment is one of the key things that they lose. So they're more likely to do risky behavior, and that is part of that syndrome down the line. So that you're punishing a child who may have been the result of fetal alcohol syndrome, and now you're punishing them again. I mean, so I just, long term. And I do think you should have somebody that should talk to you about fetal alcohol syndrome.
Senator Huggins.
Ms. Smith, in relationship to fetal alcohol syndrome, your solution to exempt alcoholic mothers from this, what's your solution?
Well, I guess I don't understand why in the budget we're trying to cut back programs that would assist women who are alcoholics or assist women who have drug problems, and then at the same time we're willing to turn around and punish them down the road, which is going to cost more money over here. It seems to me, I guess, that I agree with everybody else, or agree with some of the women who have testified ahead of me, that prevention, education, everything we can do to prevent alcoholism from occurring, prevent drug addiction from occurring, you know, providing better parents might be an assistance to preventing both of those situations. So, you know, encouraging parental education in high schools, you know, demanding that all high schools provide parental education courses. I think we should be working on the preventative end as opposed to the punishment end.
It's interesting to me, excuse me if I want to follow up, it's interesting to me if a young person goes to a liquor store and buys liquor, they're charged because they're buying to a minor. The person's selling because they're selling to a minor. It's a purchase process, but when the mother's mainlining to the child, say, prevention and don't hold them accountable, those kinds of conflicts are the ones that concern me. We know the consequences. Well, I say we know the consequences. We understand that it's almost an epidemic rampage in our society we're talking about here. Inaction certainly is not the solution.
Well, sometimes I wonder if we get blown away by the numbers because our population has increased and we're not necessarily looking at percentages. So I guess my question is, have the numbers really changed, or are we just looking, I mean, percentage-wise in the population, have the numbers really changed from 50 years ago, or are we just looking at the numbers of babies and saying, oh, look at all these children who are harmed? So that's one aspect. But I guess it gets back to this. I find it odd that we're willing to punish these women, and at the same time, there's so many people out there who are against abortion, you know, and so they wouldn't want people saying, oh, no, go out and have an abortion, so then you won't have this problem down the road. Because certainly that would be a solution. And certainly if I was going to be talking to one of these young women and I knew they were an alcoholic or a drug addict, I would say, look, you're going to be in deep trouble. And so therefore I would recommend you have an abortion. But you know what happens is, but they really care about that fetus too, and they would like to bring that fetus to term. Their intention is not to harm that fetus. It's that they have a disease. And I think that's what we need to be looking at, putting more money into these prevention tactics than, I mean, they might even go ahead and have a baby that they are sure is a fetal, you know, that they may know is a fetal alcohol problem, which might not be a good decision. I mean, you and I might say that's not really a wise decision. You're bringing this child into this world, and yet we move ahead.
Senator Guess?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just in response to the last two questions, last time I checked, Senator Huggins, there's still a wait list in Anchorage for alcohol treatment for pregnant women. So, I mean, we do have an issue right now, and we won't even touch on the preventive end, but situations where women are pregnant in this state and there's not access to treatment. And if there's a priority, in my mind, that's where there should be. In response to Senator French's question, the sponsor, I think, Senator French, when you weren't here, Senator Dyson, if I remember his testimony correctly, and you can ask him on the floor, was that, my knowledge is, we don't know yet. And that's the difficulty thing. And those of us who have been pregnant or have had spouses, I mean, it's overwhelming everything you can do that might have an effect. But we don't know yet now, call when, how much, where. We know that FAS is much more serious than FAE. But at least Senator Dyson had testified that he thinks that probably in the future at some point we're going to know when and how much, but we don't know right now.
And this really goes to one more odd thing, which is that now we're finding out more and more that women who are overweight are going to probably have overweight babies, who are going to be overweight in adulthood, who are going to suffer lots of discrimination in schools, you know.
That's another issue. But
well, no, but it actually pertains to this, because in actuality, you're endangering that child's health.
Robin. Karen's next. I've got to try to get everybody in here. Karen, welcome back.
Thank you. And again, for the record, my name is Karen Robinson, and I'm here today testifying on behalf of the Alaska Women's Lobby. And in respect to your time, many of you have already heard my written testimony, so I'll just get very quickly to the point. And first, again, we believe that the focus must be shifted back to the woman. We would like to see Senate Bill 20 move forward. If it moves forward, we believe it should focus on the danger to the pregnant woman. Keeping her safe will keep the fetus safe. I think you've kind of heard all morning long regarding what it seems to be kind of complicated language within the existing bill. And we really do believe that there's a really simple way to accomplish doing what you would like to do. And we have spoke to those. The sentencing aggravators would acknowledge that the crime committed against the pregnant woman gives the court the leeway to consider the loss of the fetus. Or again, probably the language that I still think is the best, and it's the North Carolina language. It's a law that states the person who is in a commission of a felony causes injury to a woman, knowing that the woman to be pregnant, which injures injury results in a miscarriage or stillborn by the woman, and is guilty of a felony, is one class higher than the felony committed. Again, it just is clean. I think all of us can understand it. I think you get away from the different consequences that have been spoken about by a lot of folks today. And a lot of the testimony today has been kind of zeroed on the woman having and doing something to her fetus. I just want to give one more scenario that as you move through and you're thinking out this piece of legislation is really making sure that each level you understand. And the one that probably scares me the most is a situation, and being both a mother and a grandmother these days, you know, we have put in the law, you know, regarding the driving permits for our kids, what I think is a great piece of legislation. I wished it was around when my son was young. But your son, your daughter's driving you to work, to school, has his driving permit, she has her driving permit, heading down the highway, excited, sees some of their friends, waves, reaches down to get their cell phone, they can call them, tell them they're going to be at school in a moment, runs a red light, and has an accident. Now, this young person might know, may not know, that mom found out she was pregnant about 3 weeks before. The whole family is really excited about this pregnancy, at least mom and dad, maybe the son or daughter doesn't even know yet. In this situation, what a horrible situation to put a mother in, that now her son, her daughter, could be charged with manslaughter. And not only did they just lose the child they maybe were excited about and thought they were going to be sharing with the rest of the family, but now they also have a son and daughter who may be charged with manslaughter. And so I just really think that it's really important to look at what this bill can do. Again, go back to simplicity so that we can all understand it. Also, just very quickly, and Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to also, just from last week, wanted to respond to your comments to Carrie Robinson regarding the Network on Domestic Violence. And I'll be very brief on this one, but I've been sitting before this body since 1978, the very first time as a young single mother, actually in this committee room. Used to be long tables, no podiums, and on behalf of the network. And I just want you to know that the network is your agency programs from across the state. They have been working on these issues for a very long time, and I have no doubt at any time that you have room and availability in this committee to hear from both the Council on Domestic Violence and the network together on the kinds of laws that we have passed since 1976 has been amazing. And at 1996, we did the Ombuds Bill on Domestic Violence. It was at that time we all tried to step back to see how things worked, so that because people were pretty skittish about that piece of legislation and what it was going to do. But you have to remember, we came from a time where we actually had police officers on tape saying that, okay, it's Thanksgiving, and he hit her over the head with a frying pan, but you can say, okay, it's his fault for hitting her over the head with a frying pan, but, you know, she did burn the turkey. I mean, that's where we started from. We're talking about about 30 years of trying to change the laws in this nation and bring this country around to the seriousness of domestic violence. And I'll kind of end to Representative Huggins is your comment regarding, you know, the victim can't defend himself. I think it's, again, understanding that quite often the horribleness of being in domestic violence and how difficult it is for a person who, one, may be small, may have a tremendous amount of control over them, to defend themselves, whether it's been that they've been told, if you do whatever, I'll kill your father, I'll kill your mother, I'll kill your child. And it's a little harder to say you can defend yourself. And matter of fact, in the most recent history of women now starting to defend themselves, they're also being arrested for abuse. And I'll end. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you, Karen. Glad to have you back. Teresa Beadle. Is it Tessa or Teresa? Tessa. Tessa, welcome to Judiciary Committee. And if you'll put your name on the record, we're eager to hear your testimony.
I'm Tessa Beadle. I'm 13 years old and a seventh grader at DZ Middle School, and I have lived in Juneau all my life. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to state my opinion on SB 20. Currently, there are no laws protecting the unborn child, so now if a woman and unborn child are hurt, the criminal will only be charged with crimes against the woman, not the child. Some ways that doctors have determined if a person is alive or not is by their pulse and brain activity. At 12 weeks pregnant, my mother had an ultrasound, and my parents were able to see my heart beating in the outline of my body. So with this strong heartbeat comes life, and because of this life, there is the right to protection. So I strongly urge you to vote in favor of SB 20. Thank you.
Questions for Tessa? Thank you, Tessa, for coming in this morning. We have, is it Maddie? Maddie Nolan. Welcome, Maddie, to the Judiciary Committee this morning. If you'll tell us who you are on the record, we're eager to hear your testimony as well.
Hello, my name is Maddie Nolan, and I am 13 years old in 7th grade at DeZonta Kahini Middle School. I have been living in Juneau since I was 5 years old. I would like to thank all of you senators for giving me a chance to testify on SB 20. I am in support of passing Senate Bill 20. If someone killed a pregnant woman, well, I'll call her Susan, but if someone killed a pregnant woman named Susan yesterday, they would be convicted of murder of Susan, but not for the murder of her unborn child. While Susan's family was grieving her death, they would also be grieving for the unborn child. While the family was grieving for the loss of two people, the murderer was only punished for killing one person. According to Dr. W. David Hager of the Food and Drug Administration, unborn children are alive just like you and me. And this bill passes that any person who is injured or killed, and the unborn child, or any person who injured or killed an unborn child, would be penalized the same as if the child was born. I'm in favor of Senate Bill 20 because an unborn child is just as alive as you and me. They have a pulse and a heartbeat. An unborn child should have the same liberties as a born child, whether they're born or not, because they're people, and they're just like us. And so please vote in favor of SB 20. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Maddie? Thank you for being here this morning. Kathy Girard. Kathy, welcome to Judiciary Committee this morning, and if you'll put your name on the record for us, we're eager to hear your testimony as well.
Okay, thank you. My name's Kathy Girard. I'm from Anchorage. I represent myself, and I'm actually here in reading somebody else's testimony who could not be here today, and that's Sherry Markin-Gall, principal of Pacific Solutions, and her letter is dated March 29, 2005. Dear Chairman Seekins and members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, having spent most of my working life advocating for women's rights and safety, I regret that I must oppose SB 20 as currently written. Violence against women is abhorrent and is far too great a problem in our state. Women are more often victims of violence perpetuated by someone they know than they are by strangers, and the physical assaults they suffer often escalate when the woman is pregnant. The victim in every case of violence against a pregnant woman is the woman. If the assault harms her so seriously as to terminate her pregnancy, the crime is more serious and the penalty should be greater, but the victim is still the pregnant woman. She is the living person upon whom a crime has been perpetrated. Our criminal laws include crimes against persons and crimes involving property. The legal definition of a person is, and should remain, a, quote, homo sapien who was born alive, end quote. An embryo or a fetus does not fit this definition. Until it is born alive, it remains a part of a woman's body. The term unborn child is neither a legal or a medical term. Please do not cloud our statutes with politically charged language intended to make points with those of one side of the abortion debate. Please remove these references from the bill and put the focus on the legislation where it belongs, on the safety of the pregnant woman, rather than on the debate over when life begins. I strongly urge the Judiciary Committee to replace the term unborn child with the correct terms embryo, fetus, and viable fetus, and miscarriage and stillborn as appropriate throughout the legislation. I very much support a sentencing aggravator for assaults on pregnant women that allows the court to consider that a greater crime has been committed against the woman if the resulting harm includes the loss of her fetus. The best way to protect fetuses is to protect the women who carry them within their bodies. Please put the focus on this legislation where it belongs, on the pregnant woman who is a victim to a crime of violence. Thank you very much for your consideration. Sincerely, Sherry Gull.
Thank you very much for reading that into the record.
Thank you.
If you'll provide a copy to the clerk, we'll include it in the record. That ends our public testimony for the day on this bill. I have one question for Annie. If I could ask you a question. So we've closed public testimony now on SB 20. Annie, in the question that we were discussing earlier, this, I should say, Ms. Carpinetti, I'm sorry for the familiarity here. We were discussing earlier the premature birth weight issue. My question is, and tell me whether I'm analyzing this correctly or not, that I would still have to show reckless behavior, and I would still have to show the use of a dangerous instrument. So the low birth weight is really just a symptom, and I'd have to prove a criminal causation based on the mental state, meaning reckless, and the weapon being a dangerous instrument. So that low birth weight without one and two there, a reckless behavior and a dangerous instrument is not a crime. Is that how you would analyze that?
I think you have to look at it the way the bill is. The most recent draft is you look at the homicide murder of an unborn child. I guess I'm not in. You're talking about assault, right? Because you
right.
end up with a child that's
right.
that's born. I think with 282 sub on page 3, lines 22 to 23, a person recklessly causes serious physical injury to an unborn child. That would not require a dangerous instrument as it's currently drafted. That is covered under line 7 and 8 on page 3,
right.
which is first degree. So this could cover a person taking a serious a risk, disregarding it in a very substantial manner that you've already read as to recklessly causing a serious physical injury, which would be a low birth weight child. So, but you would have to prove recklessly, but under the second degree assault, you would not, it would not
right.
include dangerous instrument.
Tell me just how much jeopardy does that put a woman in who through just normal, what would be considered to be a normal activity, would have a premature baby?
I think it would be a huge stretch to say that a normal activity, a person who is behaving in a normal way and going through life the way people do, we could prove that they acted recklessly and that recklessness caused a low birth child. Because we would have to prove that they knew of a risk, they consciously disregarded it, and the risk was so of such a nature that other people would not have taken that risk. It is problematic when you start to think about whether going on a ride in an amusement park is such a risk. I would conclude that it isn't.
I get my family's actively involved with equestrian sports, and there are I've seen a lot of pregnant women that have competed in very active equestrian sports. Some people might think that that was putting that unborn child at risk. Others don't.
Well, I think a prosecutor ethically has to be pretty convinced that he or she can prove his case to a jury beyond a reasonable doubt before he brings a charge of this nature. So I did appreciate your calling me back because I did want to clarify one thing that I wasn't clear about in terms of consecutive sentencing. In the scenario that Senator French suggested, which is murder in the second degree with an automobile, and you find victims who are pregnant with multiple children, it would be 10 years mandatory minimum, and then our consecutive sentencing law requires that that 10-year mandatory minimum be served consecutively, so that it's not 20 years. The 20 years applies to some children who are victims, but not under that scenario that you described. I just wanted to clarify that.
Thank you, Ms. Carpenetti. Okay, we're going to hold this SB 20 over. Senator Terrio on.
Chairman.
Go ahead, Senator French.
Sorry, I want to interrupt before you go on to the next bill. I have one amendment that I'd like to distribute to the members. It's a fairly lengthy amendment, but I wanted to give folks a chance to look at it before the next.
If you'll distribute it, we'll consider it in the next time.
Instead, bill comes up. Blindside folks with it.
No problem. Thank you, Senator French. Senator Terrio, where are we with your bill, sir?
Mr. Chairman, I think we're ready for the committee to take final action and make a decision on the bill. We've got no shortage of warring legal opinions.
I saw that.
And to tell you the truth, having read them all, and I think the bill is fine the way it is.
You have a motion for us, Senator Terrio?
Mr. Chairman, I would move Senate Bill 128 from committee with individual recommendations and the 1-0 fiscal note.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the bill is moved to the next committee of referral. Do we have other business to come before this committee today? Our schedule for tomorrow, Mr. Hove.
Tomorrow we have confirmation for.
It will be a joint meeting with the House Judiciary to begin the meeting tomorrow at 8:30 for confirmation hearing for David Marquez, for Attorney General, and SB 140, banning internet spyware. Is that one of yours, Senator Terrio?
Yes, it is.
Location of that meeting, Mr. Chairman?
That meeting will be here, am I correct?
That's correct.
The meeting will be here in the morning, 8:30. With that, Judiciary Committee is adjourned at 8:30.